Welcome to Building Fortunes Radio. Make sure you check us out at buildingfortunesradio.com. Along with our marketing partners, we're here to help our PM Marketing Network Lead customers build their businesses and make the world a better place. At Building Fortunes, we know how much your business means to you and the people important to you. So spread the word, tell a friend, join our newsletter, and go make a difference in your world. Now on to our show with your host, Peter Mingles.
Hello, everyone. Peter Mingles here. You're listening to me all by myself today on Building Fortunes Radio. It's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. It's a Friday. It's 5 p.m. Eastern time for those people that might be listening in. I used to have this spot all by myself, and then I gave it away to a gentleman named Ole Cantos. Ole is a really good guy. He's an attorney over in Washington, D.C. He's just an excellent individual. He's an attorney, like I mentioned, Washington, D.C., also happens to be blind. He's a great example of, like, good people on earth. He adopted three boys. They were triplets. They are still blind, and makes an interesting household, I'm sure. So you have Ole, who's been blind since birth, worked his way up to being an attorney, who adopted three boys, the triplets, Stephen, Nick, and Leo. Last name is Cantos, so if you look for Ole, O-L-L-I-E Cantos, you'll be able to see them over there, and they represent some of the best things in the world about network marketing. And he usually shows up on this radio show sometimes because of work or whatever. He might run late. Nick sometimes shows up as well. He's a college student. But today, I suspect, because it's the day after Thanksgiving for those people that like dates, they are not here. So I'm going to take advantage of this, if you will, by just buying a little bit of time just in case they show up late. And then more importantly, I'm going to play an interview. Whoops. I'm going to let that ring. I'm going to play an interview of a text version of a script that happened with a gentleman named Robert Fitzpatrick. So I'll kind of explain. There was an interview recently with Robert Fitzpatrick. He has a website called PonziSchemeAlert.org, I believe. PonziSchemeAlert.org. And he was interviewed by a gentleman whose name I don't know. And that part doesn't matter as much. But I had the opportunity to take the text, T-E-X-T, of that audio, I'm sorry, the text of that interview, and then plug it into some of the software that I have that reads text. So sometimes I get a lot of stuff, probably just like you do, and I can't read it all. So I might copy it into my software program, which is a free app. We'll talk about that later. But it's a free app, and I can put it in there, and it then reads it to me. So I edited this just a little bit. So instead of RF in the text, it says Robert Fitzpatrick, so you know who's talking. And I don't remember what the gentleman's first name was because it's been a little bit since I've done this. Sorry about that. But you'll hear a computer-generated voice speaking both sides. Again, I'm not spending a lot of time on this, but one of the reasons why I did this, I wanted you to be able to hear an interview, unedited, that was written in text from two people that are anti-MLM. So they bring up whatever their views are on anti-MLM. And let me tell you something. In any industry, there's pluses and minuses, and that doesn't wash out the minuses about MLM. So there's a lot of income claims, there's a lot of medical claims, and I'm not talking about the stuff that works. I'm talking about sometimes the people that say things they just shouldn't. So I'll admit there's plenty of room for improvement in MLM. And then there's some basic scammers, but that happens in every industry, and that doesn't discount what I just said as well. But there's an argument that Robert Fitzpatrick makes constantly about MLM being an endless chain. He uses that term. And then also the idea that people cannot make money by selling MLM products in the real world. Like, he'll say things like, I don't know anybody who has ever made any money selling products in the real world, like, without recruiting. So both of those things I disagree with, and I can factually disagree with them as well. So we'll start off by saying you could listen to previous radio shows that we've done where we've had people in MLM that make money and will tell you stories about people that make money in selling MLM products without ever wanting to or needing to recruit other people. So that dismisses, completely annihilates Robert Fitzpatrick's And I come a little bit hard about Robert Fitzpatrick because I have been told that he recently wrote a book called Ponzi-nomics. So Ponzi-nomics. And he recently said something about me, is what I've been told. I don't know. I'm not buying his book to find out. But I've been told that he said something that I was fined as a result of something that happened in the Zeke Rewards case. And that has never happened. I'm not sure where he gets his research from, but it's probably the same place that he gets his research on endless chains and people not making money selling products. So I've got to throw Robert Fitzpatrick under the bus in that regard. Now, I think I like Robert Fitzpatrick. I've never sat down with him for any long period of time, although I did sit down with him briefly at the Zeke Rewards trial over in North Carolina, I believe it was in 2017. However, so having said that, the endless chain thing also gets me going too, because it's kind of like they think that you build MLM companies like you push buttons on a calculator. 5 times 5 times 5 times 5 times 5 times 5, and after you hit whatever, 11 or 12 or 13 levels, you run out of people in the United States and the world and the globe and maybe even the natural known universe, and that's considered the endless chain. Like, you're going to run out of people to sell to. And I'd say, well, that sounds good if you think the world works like pushing buttons like a math equation on a calculator, but that's not the way the world works. So I don't know why you think MLM works that way. Anybody who's ever been actively involved in MLM realize that most people don't sponsor a whole bunch of people, and that doesn't get duplicated either. So the reality is that you can still make a part-time or a full-time income in MLM, selling products or recruiting people, building a team or a combination of both. But one thing you won't do, you won't ever satisfy that endless chain argument that he hinges most of his book and most of his arguments at. So for anybody that really wants to test that, just put anybody that knows anything against him at a criminal trial or a civil trial or any kind of an arbitration trial where he's the expert witness and then you're the expert witness, because you can blow the doors off this endless chain, and you can blow the doors in disbelief over the concept of not being able to make money selling MLM product. And you certainly can blow the doors off after me being sued, or, if you will, subpoenaed. And, well, I was subpoenaed by the criminal investigation of the IRS, and also several times and several different reasons as, you know, part of whatever company. But being a subpoena means they're asking you for information. But never have been fined or charged or whatever in anything. So I don't know where you get your results from either there, too. But that's just one more thing that I think people are just sloppy with research for their own benefit. I don't get it. So here we go. I'm going to play the interview, and I'm going to kind of step out of the way without commenting, so you'll be able to hear it as well. Here we go.
Jacobin with Robert Fitzpatrick. About the interviewer. Luke Savage is a staff writer at Jacobin. About the author. Robert Fitzpatrick is author of Ponzi-nomics, The Untold Story of Multi-Level Marketing. November 5, 2021. Multi-level marketing companies cheat and exploit ordinary people on a vast scale. An interview with Robert Fitzpatrick. Multi-level marketing is a scam. But thanks to protection by political elites and well-funded industry propaganda, it keeps growing. Cracking down on it would be as simple as enforcing the laws against fraud if only the political will could be found. Former U.S. Education Secretary Betsy DeVos and her husband Dick DeVos, pictured right. Dick DeVos is the son of late billionaire Richard DeVos, who founded MLM giant Amway. Chip Somodavilla / Getty Images. Our fall issue is out in print and online this month. Subscribe at a special rate and start reading today. Jacobin has a board game now. So-called multi-level marketing, MLM, schemes have been around for decades, and for almost as long as they've existed, they've carried a pungent whiff of fraud. But as author and longtime MLM expert Robert Fitzpatrick argues, the industry has only grown in size and influence since its inception, remaining a poorly understood and criminally underregulated enterprise that generates billions in revenue every year while scamming countless Americans. As Fitzpatrick notes, MLM has eluded not only the wrath of law enforcement, but also the scrutiny of investigative journalists and the critiques of progressive advocacy and activism, despite extracting billions of dollars from millions of people each year and well-established ties to the political right. Jacobin's Luke Savage sat down with Fitzpatrick for a wide-ranging conversation about the history, scale, and structure of MLMs, and why there's no such thing as a legitimate MLM. Luke. Before the interview, you argued to me that MLM is so reflective of prevailing cultural systems, dogmas, and economic structures, that it remains largely unexamined, almost invisible, even though just a cursory study reveals an extraordinary fraud on a global scale, disguised as legitimate business. So, let's begin by laying out some basic terms of reference. Plenty of people have an extremely general sense of what multilevel marketing is, but many are unaware of the fine details and of how opaque the term ultimately is. How does multilevel marketing work? How is it officially defined, and how do you define it? Robert Fitzpatrick. I define it as a cultic racket, and I use the term Ponzi-nomics, which I think captures two basic realities of multilevel marketing. One, that it's a pyramid scheme, that's its model. That's how it swindles people using the classic money transfer, closed market pyramid scheme. People come in and give their money, the money goes to people who came in earlier, the newest people have to bring in other people in order to recoup and gain the promised income. That's the classic pyramid scheme. It's basic fraud. The second part of it, though, is that it has become, since its inception, and we are talking about an identifiable economic movement with structure and leaders, not something that evolved out of nothing. It was invented at a specific point in time, 1945, it operated for about 15 years, and then it morphed into another stage in the 60s. It became a belief system and an actual ideology. It has become a cult itself, with a cultic mindset and a kind of belief system that is all-encompassing. It was pseudo-economics. It had moral overtones because the two leaders who turned it into a cult were these very pious, devout, and extremist Christian Calvinists Richard DeVos and J. Van Andel of Amway. MLM has eluded not only the wrath of law enforcement, but also the scrutiny of investigative journalists and the critiques of progressive advocacy and activism. So, my take on MLM, as far as public understanding of it goes, is not that there are nuances to it that have escaped people, but that the fundamental reality has been covered up and replaced by a myth and a disguised operation. It's not that the average person understands some but not all of it, but that mostly, what they think they understand is actually a propaganda story that's completely false. The two things they're told are, one, that it's an income opportunity. Well, my God, we all need income opportunities right now, more than ever in our history. I mean, I'm old enough to remember when coming out of school, there were income opportunities everywhere. They were called jobs and careers, and they were plentiful and they were promising and interesting, and of course, they have diminished. The second identity that it claims is direct selling. Direct selling has products, people buy the product, and then supposedly sell it. But, again, with a little bit of common sense, with a little water splashed on that, who could make a living selling products from their home by themselves in the 21st century, selling against Costco, Amazon, Walmart, or any online retailer? Who has time for somebody to be in your home, pitching you on a product? Who needs a salesperson for such a thing? Actual direct selling had died by the 70s and was pretty much all gone as a business model. Direct selling is actually extinct. MLM assumed its old identity, which still lingers in the cultural memory as a paragon of personal initiative. On top of all that, the particular way multilevel marketing is designed couldn't be direct selling. Let's say I sign up and can now sell this anti-aging cream to all my friends. But then I find out the company has basically recruited all my friends, and their salespeople too. And they advised me to go talk to my friends and sign them up. But wouldn't they become my competitors? So, it isn't direct selling. That model is obsolete. What it actually is, when you get into it for 5 minutes, is a recruiting scheme. You can't make money selling. You recruit. And as part of the recruiting, the recruit must buy. That's not a sale, because I added something to the transaction that I can never deliver. I add to it that you're going to make money when you join. You won't, and that's by design. The income opportunity component requires a little more study. But that too is in total violation of how direct selling, or indeed how all selling, works. If you look at the pay plan in these schemes, it's very complicated. I've had reporters call me and say, help me understand the pay plan. I just can't quite get it. And, as I said, you won't get it. You're not supposed to get it. It has too many variables for you to possibly understand it. Nobody could, but I think you notice one thing immediately without going through all the ranks and the titles and the percentages and all of these qualifying rules and so on. It is this: when the last person in buys the product, there's an amount of money that they pay, let's say $100. And out of that $100, there's going to be a percentage that's allocated to the recruiting chain. But the way they allocate it is that the majority of commission dollars, it's usually about 40% of the total price is going to go up the chain, but the majority of that 40% goes right to the top, not to the person that recruited you. In real sales, it's the opposite. The person who makes the sale gets the majority of whatever total amount of commission is allocated on that transaction. So, you can't make money. You couldn't even make money from selling. Instead, you have to recruit recruiters who recruit recruiters. You have to get to the top before you can actually make money on those types of transactions. So, you must recruit. Of course, only a tiny percent can be at the top, so all others are doomed to lose. So, that's the way I identify multilevel marketing. It's a cultic racket that has embedded itself in our economy, disguised as direct selling and an income opportunity and protected by government through corruption and lobbying and ignored, even by the left, as a destructive economic and social force. The multilevel octopus, I think it would also be worth giving people a scale of MLM as an industry and the landscape of regulation in relation to it. In recent years, there have been high-profile examples that people may well have heard of. Herbalife Nutrition is one obvious example. Lularo, which was featured in a recent documentary in which you appeared, is another. How extensive is the MLM enterprise beyond these better-known examples? Robert Fitzpatrick. I've been tracking it since the early 90s. It's gotten vastly larger by multiples, even in the United States, over that period of time. But more importantly, it has spread globally. It's in 170 countries. We've estimated that the total revenue these schemes have generated is over $1 trillion worldwide, not annually, but it's around $200 billion annually. Someone in approximately 1 in 6 or 7 households in the United States is engaged in one of these schemes. I know this, too, because I can't meet anybody who hasn't had this kind experience. Everybody I know has had an MLM experience. Just anecdotally, I know this thing is pervasive, almost universal now. Except I'll tell you one group where seemingly the least number of people are affected: journalists. Journalists, I find, are the least affected people. And I'm not sure why that is. It may be that recruiters know not to contact them. It may be that they are insulated from this sort of thing. They tend to be critical thinkers, questioners, or skeptics. But, as a consequence, often many journalists who are assigned to go question this thing, start from a premise that it is some kind of marginal and not very significant phenomenon consisting of silly, naive people. But I've been involved in court cases involving these schemes where the primary or the highest profile victims were quite literally players in the NFL. Every group has been targeted by these schemes: African Americans, Orthodox Jews, Muslims. There are no exceptions there. This is affinity fraud, so it spreads easily. People know each other, and someone tends to join because the recruiter looks like or is known to them. It is literally pervasive in the grassroots of the United States. I used to wonder, why in the world aren't there documentaries on this? I've talked to many documentarians about it, and they all give up. They say, either they can't get money, or they can't get their arms around the subject. Or they don't think the subject itself is interesting enough to market to funders. The government did try to shut down Amway in the 70s, but Amway subverted that prosecution at the highest level of government. I also encountered this with my book Ponzi Nomics. I had a very good agent in New York. We went to major publishers, and we had a lot of interest from younger editors with the book, but we couldn't sell it. Academia also does not touch it. Incidentally, there are hundreds of academics that have a relationship with the Direct Selling Association, and they get money and grants and things to give legitimacy to this. So, publishing, media, academia, and also government regulators have been suppressed around the MLM enterprise. It operates invisibly as a huge loop and is huge dollar-wise, number of people-wise, and is growing. It was spreading when COVID-19 came, and it got a huge boost because we suddenly had millions of people furloughed from their jobs and sitting at home quarantined, and then they go online, and there it is. Since you just mentioned regulators, I wanted to ask, how, if at all, is multi-level marketing regulated? Robert Fitzpatrick. When we're speaking about pyramid schemes, we're not talking about anything that's lawful. Nowhere in the world are pyramid schemes treated as lawful or legitimate financial enterprises, so it would be normal for law enforcement to be involved. And they were, historically. I tracked this in the book. These things started and were disguised as direct selling enterprises, but they immediately attracted the attention of the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, because the very first multi-level marketing company was prosecuted for selling snake oil, in this case, a so-called vitamin pill that claimed it would cure virtually everything. They get prosecuted for that, but it wasn't until the mid-60s that regulators began looking at the business model itself, the recruiting scheme, and began examining it for fraud. But they discover right away that there are similar companies, or seemingly similar companies, called direct selling companies that still existed at that time. So, they didn't want to sweep them into the law. They discovered there is no federal law in the United States, and there still isn't today, against pyramid schemes. There's no law that specifically uses the phrase, but some state laws were written in the 60s and into the 70s that attempted to outlaw this method of selling. And they tried to thread a line between this type of scheme, which is really a recruiting scheme, and an actual direct selling business. That's the dilemma that regulators faced. But right from the start, the first major scheme, which would be Amway, became a major political force in the country. The government did try to shut down Amway in the 70s, but Amway subverted that prosecution at the highest level of government with the President of the United States, who was then Gerald Ford, taking his largest contribution from the Amway families. They funded his library, his museum, and he later became a spokesman for them. His Secretary of State became a consultant. They actually met with him at the White House while the Federal Trade Commission, FTC, was trying to shut down Amway. You had Richard DeVos, who was very heavily involved with the Republican Party, and his partner Jay Van Andel was at one point chairman of the board of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. So, between these two spheres of influence, they really suppressed prosecution. This is not anything subtle. This is old-fashioned insider corruption, bribery, lobbying, and influence peddling that has prevented the government from regulating as a consequence. Nobody really actually oversees. There's no data gathered on multi-level marketing. There's no federal law that is specific to pyramid schemes, and it's instead been relegated to the Federal Trade Commission. And this is important because it treats multi-level marketing as merely a business practice. They took a very generic term out of the Federal Trade Commission Act called Unfair and Deceptive Trade Practice and said, well, a pyramid scheme would be that, so we'll regulate it. But they start from the premise that multi-level marketing is legitimate and offer a definition of what a legitimate MLM looks like that has never actually been identified in the real world. Now, you can draw a picture of a unicorn. You can believe in a unicorn if you want to, but that doesn't mean they exist. And that's what the FTC did. It created a legal unicorn that it calls legitimate multi-level marketing. Luke. Is it regulated differently in other jurisdictions? Are there countries where this kind of practice is illegal or treated as fraudulent? Robert Fitzpatrick. Well, This is why I called it a racket and why I felt that this thing couldn't really be grasped until someone laid out the history and asked how it spread and accrued this much power without being shut down, particularly given the consequences for most people involved in these schemes. 99% never earn a penny. It's a tremendous loss, even aside from the social disruption caused. But if you track it, you immediately find it got a tremendous political fix here in the United States. Then, with that political protection of the U.S. Department of State and the U.S. Department of Commerce, it entered all these other countries, and it did it right through the World Trade Organization. So, it is protected wherever it goes. And yes, there are other countries that have investigated it, but they never prosecuted either because it is huge here in the United States. I mean, the Department of Education, all our U.S. schools, was until recently headed up by Betsy DeVos, who is the wife of the CEO of Amway. So, is some country in Asia going to say, that's illegal here? I was invited to attend a conference in Sri Lanka that brought together central bankers from Sri Lanka, Bhutan, the Maldives, India, and Bangladesh, and they were plagued by multi-level marketing. Sri Lanka's currency was even attacked by a scheme that was selling gold coins, which was pulling the currency out of the country and devaluing it. So, they became very alarmed by this. But they had no law and asked me to help them write one. But privately, people came over to me and said, we'd love to ban the whole thing, but we don't dare. It's protected by the World Trade Organization and the U.S. Department of Commerce, and if we try to do something, they would get on the phone and tell us to leave it alone. So, this is a global racket that enjoys substantial political protection. Already illegal. Luke. I realize this is a big question. But supposing you had a legal or a legislative magic wand, what would you change about the current landscape vis-a-vis MLMs and how they're regulated? Robert Fitzpatrick. I don't think there's a legislative solution needed. If what is going on is as I've described, and I don't think it requires too much effort to validate my account of things, the structure itself can be easily analyzed. It's neither an income opportunity nor direct selling, so what is it then? Well, we have laws against fraud. We have laws against racketeering. So, in my view, the only thing really needed is just to take the handcuffs off law enforcement and let them go look at it and do their jobs, and we have adequate laws. This is a global racket that enjoys substantial political protection. I attended the trial of Paul Burks, CEO of an MLM called Zeke Rewards. Zeke Rewards only lived about 2.5 years, and in less than a year and a half raised $600 million from over 1 million people. This little scam operated out of Lexington, North Carolina, and it shows you again how powerful the schemes are and how receptive the public is to them, presuming they are real businesses because that's what they're told. But this one came a little too close to presenting itself as a security or a financial commodity. You could buy in, and then you could get these credits, and then what you had paid suddenly rose in value. Anyway, it ended up being prosecuted by the Department of Justice. U.S. attorneys filed criminal charges against the CEO, and he argued he was doing legitimate multi-level marketing. He brought in about 10 consultants to attest that it was real multi-level marketing and claimed he was like Amway, but the jury didn't buy it, and after about 2.5 hours they gave him 3 concurrent sentences. I talked to the U.S. attorneys there and noted they didn't actually prosecute the case as a pyramid scheme. They essentially told me what I already knew, which is that we don't have laws against pyramid schemes in the United States. They said it's very difficult to prove a pyramid scheme, but what they do is criminal. They deceive, and they harm, and they do this deliberately in a calculated manner. That's called fraud, and we have laws against criminal fraud. That's the law that was used here. So, why is this one different from the other 700? The attorneys had no answer for that. That case is the model though. And this is the same thing you see in relation to all kinds of white-collar fraud. It's rare that corporate criminals are ever prosecuted criminally.
So there you go. You got a chance to hear it uninterrupted, and we'll be talking about this later on as well, but you can see all the inconsistencies. We'll see you next time on Building Fortunes Radio.
You've been listening to Building Fortunes Radio on buildingfortunesradio.com. Thanks for listening. Be sure to check us out every Friday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time for the designated Building Fortunes Radio segment with Peter Mingle. Be sure to check out the buildingfortunesradio.com website for our featured segments. It's been our privilege to have you listen in. At Building Fortunes Radio, we wish you the success you deserve and are willing to work for. So spread the word, tell a friend, join our newsletter, and go make a difference in your world.